Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Michael, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here to give what I hope is going to be the victim's perspective on the arrival and role of police crime commissioners, given that their arrival, I think, presents potentially a most radical shift and significant risks as well, if not handled right, to what victims can and should expect in terms of their services. Now, I appreciate I'm the sixth speaker that you've listened to this morning, and there's one more to come after me before lunch. And I used to be a maths teacher once upon a time, would you believe? And I'm well used to most people not listening when I'm talking, as most maths teachers have to put up with. So I won't be offended, but I shall try and keep it brief and succinct as I can. I'd like to let me just get this working. I'd like to touch on three key points briefly. A summary of what victim support does and why I think it's really essential that these sorts of services are available to victims. I want to talk about the PCC role for victims and witnesses and some examples of the work that they have done in relation to victims since taking office in November. And finally, how PCCs can ensure that all victims continue to receive the support they need across England and Wales from 2014. So to begin with then, victim support, as some of you may know, is the independent charity for victims and witnesses covering England and Wales. And our services are based in local communities up and down the country and have been for close to the last four decades, delivered by our 6,000 or so trained volunteers and 1,500 local staff. We're a local charity delivering locally tailored services backed up by a national infrastructure which helps to deliver training to our staff and volunteers and sets national consistent service delivery standards. Last year, we contacted over 1 million victims of crime and offered practical help and emotional support. We also work in every single criminal court in the country, times 300. And last year, we supported around 240,000 witnesses going through the trauma of giving evidence. We also run a dedicated national homicide service, which supports about 2,000 people at the moment bereaved by murder or manslaughter. And we run a national telephone helpline too. Now, in practice, what this means is that we do things like helping secure someone's home after a break-in. We help them fill out insurance forms, help them with claims for compensation. We provide emotional support, which in practice means one of our highly trained expert volunteers spending time with the victim as and when they need it. And we ensure that key information is shared, such as what will happen if a case goes to court and much more. We also work closely with other organizations at a local level and refer victims on to specialist support as and when it's most suitable for what the victim wants. So, PCCs are here. They're alive and kicking. There's 41 of them, plus the Deputy Mayor for Policing in London, who mustn't be forgotten, who will probably hold a quarter of the purse strings in future because a quarter of crime happens in the capital. And whilst the media focused on the low turnout during the PCC elections, less has been said, unfortunately, about the fundamental role that PCCs have in meeting the needs of victims of crime at a local level. Indeed, victim support recognised the importance of getting this message conveyed to PCC candidates on the needs of victims and witnesses well in advance of the November elections. Our local managers who oversee the day-to-day work of victim support's army of local volunteers and staff engaged face-to-face with all PCC candidates across every police force area and suggested to them that they should make five key commitments to victims and witnesses. I'm delighted that as a result of that work, 125 of the PCC candidates and 80% of those that were eventually elected signed up to Victim Support's five promises. A really significant achievement, I think, by any standards. We asked PCC candidates to commit to five promises, and they were that they should be open and accountable to victims and witnesses seeking out and acting on their views, so consulting, listening, reporting back. We asked them to ensure that victims and witnesses get the high-quality help and support they need it when they need it. So protect the funding and support all victims and set minimum standards. We ask them to make the police more victim-focused and more effective at meeting the needs of victims and witnesses and ask them to think about monitoring referral levels and ensure that victim issues are on regular police agendas. We ask them to give victims and witnesses an effective voice in the wider criminal justice system and measure victim satisfaction, for example, and annual reporting on outcomes, and ensure that there's a cross-criminal justice sector approach. And fifthly, we ask them to constantly work to develop new ways of delivering justice for victims, including, for example, restorative justice, focusing on victim personal statements, and making sure that information is easy to access and understandable. Now, we think these five simple promises will help safeguard and improve help for everyone affected by crime. They will help raise awareness in the short term and put in place clear principles to ensure an effective system in the longer term. Now, we also know there is no honeymoon period, of course, for PCCs to bed themselves in into a role that has been newly created. They don't have the advantage of learning from the good or bad practices adopted by predecessors. However, I see this as a real opportunity, as I'm sure many other speakers have said too, for those elected to shape the services provided at a local level. But they have to get it right first time, and that's an enormous challenge for them. PCCs must hit the ground running, and their responsibilities to victims start now, as part of their statutory requirement to obtain the views of victims. We really welcome this duty. It's the very first time in legislation that anything like that has been adopted. Home Office Minister Jeremy Brown, I heard last year at the Lib Dem Party conference, say that elected PCCs will be the George Washingtons of police commissioners, as nothing will have gone before them. There are two things we should note in reference to George Washington. Firstly, Washington argued that the United States must not be guided by political party interest, but instead by local needs. And secondly, after cutting down his father's cherry tree, a young Washington admitted the deed when questioned and said, "I can't tell a lie, Pa." There's a lesson there for us all. I think both of these points are particularly relevant for PCCs. Those elected under a party political ticket must consider the local needs of their electorate first and foremost, including victims and witnesses of crime, rather than simply the wishes of the central party office. They will also need to stay true to their word, and I urge all PCCs to evidence how they are committing to the needs of victims and witnesses and firmly place victims at the heart of their police and crime plans, which are out for consultation at the moment. I must add, I've been encouraged by what I've seen so far. Earlier this month, I attended the first Victims Summit event to be held by a PCC in the West Midlands. I was really impressed that PCC Bob Jones had taken the initiative to obtain the victims of witnesses across his patch at such an early stage. It was the very first consultation that he'd done, and he focused it on victims, clearly exemplifying that for him, victims do come first. Many positive ideas emerged from the day, and I'm really hopeful that it will help to ensure that victims of crime receive the service they require in the West Midlands and more. Another example of good practice is in Humberside, where Conservative PCC Matthew Grove, with the assistance of local victim support volunteers and staff, held focus groups with victims of crime earlier this month. And the findings from these groups, I know, have already fed into Matthew's police and crime plan. Here in London, I welcome Stephen Greenhalgh's decision to personally lead consultation with members of the public from all 32 London boroughs on the contents of his police and crime plan. And at Victim Support, we've encouraged our staff to attend these meetings and also encouraged victims of crime to respond to the consultation. I'd also like to mention the work that Commissioner Alan Michael has done in speaking up for victims and witnesses. Alan, of course, spoke to you this morning, but he spoke at Victim Support's PCC seminar at last year's party conference events and was a joint sponsor of the Westminster Hall debate along with Tony Lloyd, now the PCC for Greater Manchester. And I thank them both for the incredible amount of hard work that they put in speaking up for strongly for victims and witnesses in the past, and I look forward to watching them continue to do so. There are many other examples, which unfortunately I don't have time to mention, of the great work the PCCs have made in ensuring already that victims' voices are heard loud and clear. Now, we know PCCs have a duty to obtain the views of victims, but just as importantly, as of 2014, sometime next year, the Ministry of Justice will be handing over most of the purse strings to PCCs, and they will be able to decide what services they want to provide to victims at a local level, if at all. This means that the help and support victims will get in the hands of will be in the hands of the local PCC. What some may not be aware of is that the funding from central government will not be ring-fenced for victim services. And what concerns me, and indeed many of our criminal justice partners, is that a PCC may choose not to spend any of their funding that was meant for victims on victims, and that money disappears into other policing requirements. How real this risk is, only PCCs know the answer. We should also note that the government has already signed up to an EU directive, a new EU directive, which states that victims can expect to receive a minimum standard of service after a crime. This law comes into play in 2014. So PCCs will need to ensure that they can meet this requirement too. They can help to do this by committing to safeguard the victim services funding allocation in 2014 towards ensuring that all victims receive a needs assessment as a basic minimum and the guarantee of straightforward advice and support. Now, as a minimum, I think all victims should have available to them a first response service. In a way, for example, similar to any of the emergency services. If you know that wherever you live in this country, you call 999 and ask for an ambulance, you'll get a rapid response, a quick but thorough health assessment, and onwards referral for specialist help if that's what you need. Victims should expect the same within the criminal justice system, and the PCCs will have the opportunity and the power to make that happen. And that's why I'm asking all PCCs to commit to allocating a proportion of their victim services funding pot from next year for victim support services. This will ensure that all victims of crime receive a minimum level of service in their local area. And if they all do this, it will cost them no more than 30 to 40% of the funding that the MOJ will be passing on to them. The remainder of their funding, i.e. the lion's share, can then be commissioned by PCCs to local providers as they see fit, responding to specific local needs such as antisocial behaviour, domestic violence, hate crime, whatever the local need may be. And if all PCCs commit to this approach, we can guarantee that no victims fall through the cracks in the system, regardless of where the crime is committed in this country, reducing the risk of postcode lotteries for victims, which, frankly, in the 21st century Britain, just should not be acceptable. Let me end by sharing a real-life example, if I may, of the value of victim services. Karen was attacked when walking home along a wooded pathway. She was knocked unconscious, pinned to the ground, and strangled. Here is a brief description of what happened to Karen in her own words. I was walking home when I saw this guy coming towards me. As I got to be level with him, he grabbed me by the throat and knocked me to the ground. I found I was being pinned down on my back and he was kneeling on top of me with his hands around my throat. At first I thought he was trying to mug me, but I still had my handbag on my arm, and so then I thought he was going to do something sexual. I felt like I was going to pass out. As a last-ditch attempt, I hit him around the head with my handbag. He pulled back from me enough that I could scramble away. So you can see and appreciate that this was a pretty nasty attack, and it had quite an impact on Karen. And here is what she said about how she felt afterwards and how victim support helped her. The day after, I couldn't stop crying and felt so scared. For the first couple of weeks after the attack, I was having nightmares every night and flashbacks. It was like reliving it on a movie reel. Within days of the attack, victim support phoned me and we chatted about what had happened and the support I wanted. I initially got counseling through my work, which was good, but it wasn't specifically for victims. So it was good to have someone else to talk to that understood and had helped other people through the same kind of thing. My victim support volunteer understood shock and could say with some authority, "You will get better, and it will stop being so scary." They explained what I could expect and that my reaction was normal and that I should not feel scared and needed to give myself time to get over what had happened. When I was upset about the response from the criminal justice system, she backed me and let me get my anger and frustration out without trying to mollycoddle me. It was nice to speak to somebody independent who just listened to me, not having their own judgments, feelings, or worries coming into it. She suggested I get long-term counseling through my GP, which is what I then did. Thanks to the help that Karen received, she's been able to move on from that attack. We help thousands of people like Karen every single year, giving them the support they need to rebuild their lives after crime. PCCs will have the power next year to ensure that people like Karen can continue to get the help that they need and to move on in their life after that event. Now, I've tried today to give you a brief flavor of why providing high-quality support for victims of crime really matters and the critical role that PCCs will play in relation to victims. and how PCCs can ensure that all victims of crime continue to receive support services they need and deserve in the future. I'm really hopeful that victims across England and Wales have a bright future and that we are really looking forward to working closely with PCCs and our local partners to ensure that that is the case and minimise the risks for some of the most vulnerable people in our society. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from PolicyReview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.